Part 2. First Contact. 1. Guardian Angel. I woke up in some pain, ankle throbbing and hands and feet burning. I was lying on a huge inflated pillow. The air was thick and muggy, and it was dark. A yellow light was bobbing toward me, growing brighter. I heard lots of feet. It was a flashlight, or rather a light stick like you wear, and the person holding it wasn't a person. It was the red angel from my dream. Maybe I was still dreaming. I was naked, which sometimes happens in my dreams. The dog was sitting a few feet away. My broken ankle was splinted between two pieces of what felt like wood. On Mars? This angel had too many legs, like four, sticking out from under the red tunic thing. His head, if that's what it was, looked like a potato that had gone really bad. Soft and wrinkled and covered with eyes. Maybe they were eyes, lots of them, or antennae. He was almost as big as a small horse. He seemed to have two regular-sized arms and two little ones. For an angel, he smelled a lot like tuna fish. I should have been terrified, naked in front of this monster, but he definitely was the one who had saved me from freezing to death. Or he was dressed like that one. "Are you real?" I said. "Or am I still dreaming? Or dead?" He made some kind of noise, sort of like a bullfrog with teeth chattering. Then he whistled, and the lights came on. Dim, but enough to see around. The unreality of it made me dizzy. I was taking it far too calmly, maybe because I couldn't think of a thing to do. Either I was in the middle of some complicated dream, or this is what happens to you after you die, or I was completely insane, or least likely of all, I'd been rescued by a Martian. But a Martian wouldn't breathe oxygen. Not this thick. He wouldn't have wood for making splints. Though this one might know something about ankles, having so many of them. "You don't speak English, do you?" He responded with a long speech that sounded kind of threatening. Maybe it was about food animals not being allowed to talk. I was in a circular room, a little too small for both me and Big Red, with a round wall that seemed to be several layers of plastic sheeting. He had come in through slits in the plastic. The polished stone floor was warm. The high ceiling looked like the floor, but there were four bluish lights embedded in it that looked like cheap plastic decorations. It felt like a hospital room, and maybe it was one. The pillow was big enough for one like him to lie down on it. On a stone pedestal over by the dog was a pitcher and a glass made of something that looked like obsidian. He poured me a glass of something and brought it over. His hand, also potato brown, had four long fingers without nails and lots of little joints. The fingers were all the same length, and it looked like any one of them could be the thumb. The small hands were miniature versions of the big ones. The stuff in the glass didn't smell like anything and tasted like water, so I drank it down in a couple of greedy gulps. He took the glass back and refilled it. When he handed it to me, he pointed into it with a small hand and said, "Arr," sort of like a pirate. I pointed and said, "Water?" He answered with a sound like war, with a lot of extra R's. He set down the glass and brought me a plate with something that looked remarkably like a mushroom. "No thanks, I read that story." For a mad moment, I wondered whether that could be it. I had eaten or ingested something that caused all this, and it was one big dope dream. But the pain was too real. He picked the thing up delicately, and a mouth opened up in his neck, broad black teeth set in grisly red. He took a small nibble and replaced it on the plate. I shook my head no, though that could mean yes in Martian. Or some mortal insult. How long could I go without eating? A week, I supposed, but my stomach growled at the thought. He heard the growling and pointed helpfully to a hole in the floor. That took care of one question. But not quite yet, pal. We've hardly been introduced, and I don't even let my brother watch me do that. I touched my chest and said, Carmen. Then I pointed at his chest, if that's what it was. He touched his chest and said, Hun. Well, that was a start. No, I took his hand, dry, raspy skin, and brought it over to touch my chest. Carmen, I said slowly. Me Jane, you Tarzan. Or Mr. Potato Head. Hun, he repeated, which wasn't a bad Carmen if you couldn't pronounce C or M. Then he took my hand gently and placed it between his two small arms and made a sputtering sound no human could do, at least with the mouth. He let go, but I kept my hand there and said, Red, I'll call you Red.
Reh,
he said, and repeated it. It gave me a shiver. I was communicating with an alien. Someone, put up a plaque! But he turned abruptly and left. I took advantage of being alone and hopped over to the hole and used it. Not as easy as that sounds. I needed to find something to use as a crutch. This wasn't exactly Walmart, though. I drank some water and hopped back to the pillow and flopped down. My hands and feet hurt a little less. They were red, like bad sunburn, which I supposed was the first stage of frostbite. I could have lost some fingers and toes. Not that it would matter much to me with lungs full of ice. I looked around. Was I inside of Mars, or was this some kind of a spaceship? You wouldn't make a spaceship out of stone. We had to be underground, but this stone didn't look at all like the petrified lava of the colony's tunnel. And it was warm, which had to be electrical or something. The lights and plastic sheets looked pretty high-tech, but everything else was kind of basic. A hole in the floor? I hoped it wasn't somebody else's ceiling. I mentally reviewed why there can't be higher forms of life on Mars, least of all technological life. No artifacts. We've mapped every inch of it, and anything that looked artificial turned out to be natural. Of course, there's nothing to breathe, though I seem to be breathing. Same thing with water and temperature. There are plenty of microscopic organisms living underground, but how could they evolve into big bozos like Red? What is there on Mars for a big animal to eat? Rocks? Red was coming back with his light stick, followed by someone only half his size, wearing bright lime green. Smoother skin, like a more fresh potato. I decided she was female and called her Green. Just for the time being. I might have it backwards. They had seen me naked, but I hadn't seen them, and wasn't eager to, actually. They were scary enough this way. Green was carrying a plastic bag with things inside that clicked softly together. She set the bag down carefully and exchanged a few noises with Red. First, she took out a dish that looked like pottery, and from a plastic bag, shook out something that looked like an herb or pot. It started smoking immediately, and she thrust it toward me. I sniffed it. It was pleasant, like mint or menthol. She made a gesture with her two small hands, a kind of shooing motion, that I interpreted to mean breathe more deeply. And I did. She took the dish away and brought two transparent discs, like big lenses, out of the bag and handed one to me. While I held it, she pressed the other one against my forehead, then chest, then the side of my leg. She gently lifted up the foot with the broken ankle and pressed it against the sole. Then she did the other foot. She put the lenses back in her bag and stood motionless, staring at me like a doctor or scientist. I thought, okay, This is where the alien sticks a tube up your ass. But she must have left her tube back at the office. She and Red conferred for a while, making gestures with their small arms while they made noises like porpoises and machinery. Then she reached into the bag and pulled out a small metal tube, which caused me to cringe away. But she gave it a snap with her wrist, and it ratcheted out to about 6 feet long. She mimicked using it as a cane, which looked really strange, like a spider missing four legs, and handed it to me, saying,
"Hun."
Guess that was my name now. The stick felt lighter than aluminum, but when I used it to lever myself up, it was rigid and strong. She reached into her bag of tricks and brought out a thing like her tunic, somewhat thicker and softer and colored gray. There was a hole in it for my head, but no sleeves or other complications. I put it on gratefully and draped it around so I could use the stick. It was agreeably warm. Red stepped ahead, and with a rippling gesture of all four hands, indicated, "Follow me." I did, with Green coming behind me. It was a strange sensation, going through the slits in those plastic sheets or whatever they were. It was like they were alive, millions of feathery fingers clasping you and then letting go all at once to close behind you with a snap. When I went through the first one, it was noticeably cooler, and cooler still after the second one, and my ears popped. After the fourth one, it felt close to freezing, though the floor was still warm and the air was noticeably thin. I was almost panting and could see my breath. We stepped into a huge dark cavern. Rows of dim lights at about knee level marked off paths. The lights were all blue, but each path had its own kind of blue, different in shade or intensity. "Meet me at the corner of bright turquoise and dim aquamarine." I tried to remember our route, left at this shade of blue and then right at this one, but I was not sure how useful the knowledge would be. What, I was going to escape? Hold my breath and run back to the colony? We went through a single sheet into a large area, at least as well lit as my hospital room, and almost as warm. It had a kind of barnyard smell, not unpleasant. There were things that had to be plants all around, like broccoli, but brown and gray with some yellow, sitting in water that you could hear was flowing. A little mist hung near the ground, and my face felt damp. It was a hydroponic farm like ours, but without greens or the bright colors of tomatoes and peppers and citrus fruits. Green leaned over and picked something that looked like a cigar, or something even less appetizing, and offered it to me. I waved it away. She broke it in two and gave half to Red. I couldn't tell how big the place was. Probably acres. So where were all the people it was set up to feed? All the Martians. I got a partial answer when we passed through another sheet, into a brighter room about the size of the new pod we'd brought. There were about 20 of the aliens arranged along two walls, standing at tables or in front of things like data screens, but made of metal rather than plastic. There weren't any chairs. I supposed quadrupeds don't need them. They all began to move toward me, making strange noises, of course. If I'd brought one of them into a room, humans would have done the same thing, but nevertheless, I felt frightened and helpless. When I shrank back, Red put a protective arm in front of me and said a couple of bullfrog syllables. They all stopped about 10 feet away. Green talked to them more softly, gesturing toward me. Then they stepped forward in an orderly way, by colors. Two in yellow tan, three in green, two in blue, and so forth, each standing quietly in front of me for a few seconds. I wondered if the color signified rank. None of the others wore red, and none were as big as Big Red. Maybe he was the alpha male, or the only female, like bees. What were they doing? Just getting a closer look? Or taking turns trying to destroy me with thought waves? After that presentation, Red gestured for me to come over and look at the largest metal screen. Interesting. It was a panorama of our greenhouse and the other parts of the colony that were above ground. The picture might have been from the top of Telegraph Hill. Just as I noticed that there were a lot of people standing around, too many for a normal work party, the John Carter came sliding into view, a rooster tail of red dust fountaining out behind her. A lot of the people jumped up and down and waved. Then the screen went black for a few seconds, and a red rectangle opened slowly. It was the airlock light at night, as the door slid open. I was looking at myself, just a little while ago, coming out and pulling the dog behind me. The camera must have been like those flying bugs that Homeland Security spies use. I certainly hadn't seen anything. When the door closed, the picture changed to a ghostly blue, like moonlight on Earth. It followed me for a minute or so, stumbling and then staring at the ground as I walked more cautiously. Then it switched to another location, and I knew what was coming. The ground collapsed, and the dog and I disappeared in a shower of dust, which the wind swept away in an instant. The bug, or whatever it was, drifted down through the hole to hover over me as I writhed around in pain. A row of glowing symbols appeared at the bottom of the screen. There was a burst of white light when I found the dog and switched it on. Then, Big Red floated down. This was obviously the speeded-up version. Wearing several layers of that wall plastic, it seemed, riding a thing that looked like a metal sawhorse with two sidecars. He put me in one and the dog in the other. Then he floated back up. Then they skipped all the way to me lying on that pillow, naked and unlovely, in an embarrassing posture. I blushed, as if any of them cared, and then moved in close to my ankle, which was blue and swollen. Then a solid holo of a human skeleton, obviously mine, in the same position. The image moved in the same way as before. The fracture line glowed red, and then my foot, below the break, shifted slightly. The line glowed blue and disappeared. Just then, I noticed it wasn't hurting anymore. Green stepped over and gently took the staff away from me. I put weight on the foot, and it felt as good as new. "How could you do that?" I said, not expecting an answer. No matter how good they were at healing themselves, how could they apply that to a human skeleton? "Well, a human vet could treat a broken bone in an animal she'd never seen before, but it wouldn't heal in a matter of hours." Two of the amber ones brought out my skin suit and Mars suit and put them at my feet. Red pointed at me and then tapped on the screen, which again showed the surface parts of the colony. You could hardly see them for the dust, though. There was a strong storm blowing. He made an up-and-down gesture with his small arms, and then his large ones, obviously meaning, "Get dressed." So with about a million potato eyes watching, I took off the tunic and got into the skin suit. The diaper was missing, which made it feel kind of baggy. They must have thrown it away. Or analyzed it. Ugh. The creatures stared in silence while I zipped that up, and then climbed and wiggled into the Mars suit. I secured the boots and gloves, and then clamped the helmet into place, and automatically chinned the switch for an oxygen and power readout. But of course, it was still broken. I guess that would be asking too much. "You fixed my ankle, but you can't fix a simple spacesuit? What kind of Martians are you?" It was obvious I wasn't getting any air from the backpack, though. I'd need the dog's backup supply. I unshipped the helmet and faced Green, and made an exaggerated pantomime of breathing in and out. She didn't react. Hell, they probably breathed by osmosis or something. I turned to Red and crouched over, patting the air at the level of the dog. "Dog," I said, and pointed back the way we'd come. He leaned over and mimicked my gesture and said,
"Nog."
Pretty close. Then he turned to the crowd and croaked out a speech, which I think had both Harn and Nog in it. He must have understood, at least partly, because he made the four-armed come-along motion at me and went back to the place where we'd entered. I went through the plastic and looked back. Green was leading four others. It looked like one of each color, following us. Red in the lead, we all went back in what seemed the same path we'd come. I counted my steps, so that when I told people about it, I'd have at least one actual concrete number. The hydroponics room, or at least the part we cut through, was 185 steps wide. Then it was another 204 steps from there to the hospital room. I get about 70 centimeters to a step, so the trip covered about 270 meters, allowing for a little dogleg in the middle. Of course, it might go on for miles in every direction, but at least it was no smaller than that. We went into the little room, and they watched while I unreeled the dog's umbilical and plugged it in. The cool air coming through the neck fitting was more than a relief. I put my helmet back on. Green stepped forward and did a pretty good imitation of my breathing pantomime. I sort of didn't want to go. I was looking forward to coming back and learning how to communicate with Red and Green. We had other people more qualified, though. I should have listened to Mother when she got after me to take a language in school. If I'd known this was going to happen, I would have taken Chinese and Latin and body noises. The others stood away from the plastic, and Red gestured for me to follow. I pulled the dog along through the four plastic layers. This time, we turned sharply to the right and started walking up a gently sloping ramp. After a few minutes, I could look down and get a sense of how large this place was. There was the edge of a lake, an immense amount of water, even if it was only a few inches deep. From above, the buildings looked like domes of clay, or just dirt with no windows, just the pale blue light that filtered through the door layers. There were squares of different sizes and shades that were probably crops like the mushrooms and cigars, and one large square had trees that looked like 6-foot-tall broccoli, which could explain the wooden splints. We came to a level place, brightly lit, that had shelves full of bundles of the plastic stuff. Red walked straight to one shelf and pulled off a bundle. It was his Mars suit. Bending over at a strange angle, bobbing, he slid his feet into four opaque things like thick socks. His two large arms went into sleeves, ending in mittens. Then, the whole thing seemed to come alive and ripple up and over him, sealing together and then inflating. It didn't have anything that looked like an oxygen tank, but air was coming from somewhere. He gestured for me to follow, and we went toward a dark corner. He hesitated there, and held out his hand to me. I took it, and we staggered slowly through dozens of layers of the stuff, toward a dim light. It was obviously like a gradual airlock. We stopped at another flat area, which had one of the blue lights, and rested for a few minutes. Then he led me through another long series of layers, where it became completely dark. Without him leading me, I might have gotten turned around. And then it lightened slightly, the light glowing pink this time. When we came out, we were on the floor of a cave. The light was coming from a circle of Martian sky. When my eyes adjusted, I could see there was a smooth ramp leading uphill to the cave entrance. I'd never seen the sky that color. We were looking up through a serious dust storm. Red pulled a dust-covered sheet off his sawhorse-shaped vehicle. I helped him put the dog into one of the bowl-like sidecars, and I got in the other. There were two things like stubby handlebars in front, but no other controls that I could see. He backed onto the thing, straddling it, and we rose off the ground a foot or so and smoothly started forward. The glide up the ramp was smooth. I expected to be buffeted around by the dust storm, but as impressive as it looked, it didn't have much power. My umbilical tube did flap around in the wind, which made me nervous. If it snapped, a failsafe would close off the tube so I wouldn't immediately die, but I'd use up the air in the suit pretty fast. I couldn't see more than 10 or 20 feet in any direction, but Red, I hoped, could see farther. He was moving very fast. Of course, he was unlikely to hit another vehicle or a tree. I settled down into the bowl. There wasn't anything to see, and was fairly comfortable. I amused myself by imagining the reaction of Dargo Solingen and Mother and Dad when I showed up with an actual Martian. It felt like an hour or more before he slowed down, and we hit the ground and skidded to a stop. He got off his perch laboriously and came around to the dog's side. I got out to help him lift it and was knocked off balance by a gust. Four legs were a definite advantage here. He watched while I got the umbilical untangled and then pointed me in the direction we were headed. Then he made a shooing motion. "You have to come with me," I said uselessly, and tried to translate it into arm motions. He pointed and shooed again, and then backed onto the sawhorse and took off in a slow U-turn. I started to panic. What if I went in the wrong direction? I could miss the base by 20 feet and just keep walking on into the desert. And maybe I wasn't even near the base. Maybe Red had left me in the middle of nowhere for some obscure Martian reason. That wouldn't make sense. Human sense, anyhow. I stood alone in the swirling dust and felt helplessness turning into terror.